My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. And this time we are attempting to cover the dark fantasy episode Convoy to Atlantis. Although we, for various reasons, I don't think we actually really can review the episode exactly because it was turned out to be incomplete after we started listening to it. But I guess let's go around and would you recommend this in the form it exists? And also, do you think if we had a full one, you would recommend it? Ronald, why don't you go first? I think you were the sourest on it.
I was?
Yeah.
I barely said anything about it, but okay, yeah. Probably I am.
I mean, Ronald...
Rahul
said nothing, so he's starting at zero. I defended it a little, and you said the audio quality is bad and it's incomplete. So yeah, you're the most sour on it.
Yeah, I mean, the audio quality is bad and is incomplete, and there's parts that skip. That's not even really the bad part about this episode, though. I think the bad part is that it's just really nothing here. It's pretty short and nothing really happens in it. And you know, the one thing that does happen, it's kind of lost to time because it's not really very clear why it happens because of the whole audio thing. So yeah, this was not a great episode. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, though. It did get me thinking a lot on lost media, and the fact that we're even able to listen to this is pretty incredible. So, you know, that was probably the best takeaway I got from this. The show itself was not that great, though.
I'm going to go next. So I think that if we had the full thing, this one would be a minor, like, amusement. It actually has almost the same exact plot as the Ghost Ship or whatever that one we did a long time ago was, you know?
Yeah, which is also, like, one of the worst ones we've done.
Well, it was one of the least memorable, at least, yeah. But I think that if we had the whole thing, there are enough weird turns and wild swings and weird, like, this guy turns out to be immortal and stuff, that I'd be like, yeah, I could laugh at this. But the audio quality kind of sinks it to the point where I can't, like, give an opinion on this. Because, I mean, maybe the skips are covering something brilliant. Probably not, based on everything that came before, but we can't rule it out. So, yeah, I don't know. I'd say maybe almost listen to this just for the wild swings, and also it's only 21 minutes, but I don't know.
It's very short.
Yeah. Dan, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to have to take some responsibility for all this because Lawrence presented me with a list of options, and this is the one I chose.
Oh, it was you.
It was me.
It was you.
Okay, you read the title, Convoy to Atlantis, you think, oh, sweet, adventure. You
know? Right, well, at least I thought, like, I'd get some solid kook stuff out of it. And I did, in a way. But it was not the actual radio play. <you know? laughs> So I'm going to say I will not recommend this, except in the case of, like, kind of like with Ronald, an appreciation of the fact that we do have this document and what it can tell us about the development of kook ideas in the American 20th century.
Yeah. Ronnie, what would you say about this?
It felt like a radio version of a movie you would see on Mystery Science Theater 3000, where there are some concepts that might be interesting if made better, but it just results in a whole lot of nothing. And as said before, a lot of the audio issues really impede any, like, coherence or enjoyment.
Yeah. And, Rahul, anything to add? Would you recommend this to people?
You know, it's funny because I was going to say something similar to Ronnie. First of all, I think this thing is just awful. And frankly, it should just be deleted. But, you know, I could see a really shitty movie being made that would have the exact same plot. Maybe.
How? This thing didn't even fill up 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, latest Snyder movie dropping on Netflix, have cool shots of Atlantis all in slow-mo underwater.
Zack Snyder loves metallurgy-based heists, but boring ones.
The interview would be him talking about how the immortal Siegfried could take on Superman in a fight.
There'd be a lot of slow-mo for no reason and weird zooms. It'd be very clear that he mostly thought of the image first and then tried to invent a plot to tie the images together.
Yeah.
So the treasure room is like just gorgeous CGI. Like it really works, but there's nothing happening there.
It's and you're also like, why did you CGI the treasure room?
There's a bunch of fetishistic shots of women. It would just be
James Cameron's The Abyss, but with more rape threats.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Anyways, I guess let's see. Let's go ahead and try to summarize this. Anyone not want to be included in the role?
I don't want to summarize again. I've summarized the last two times I've been on this.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I'll sit out too because I'm pretty sure.
God damn it!
Summary's gonna be all right. I'll do it.
I'll do it.
No. It's right, fine. I had already clicked roll, and then you're like, "I'll sit out." So the sure.
You clicked roll.
Roll. I clicked roll.
You see what I did there?
Well, did you roll a hole?
Yeah.
No, I actually rolled myself, but then I re-rolled and it was Ronald. So I guess now we got to roll a third time to determine if it should be myself or Ronald.
I don't. Yeah, who cares?
It's me.
Okay. All sounds right. Good. You want me to time you?
Yeah, go for it. Give me a minute and a half.
A minute and a half for this one?
That's okay. A sizable percentage of the entire show.
Yeah.
Hey, fine. Give me a minute. I don't give a fuck.
If you can't do this one in under a minute, I'll be very disappointed.
We say that every time, and then we go over every time.
That's because we meander.
Yeah.
We're always disappointed. It's fine. Yeah.
We're disappointed explorers.
Constant state.
Okay. All right.
You ready? Three, two, one, start.
We start on a boat, and a guy keeps saying, "I can't believe it's 1934 over and over and over, which is weird because that means that this thing is set like 10 years in the past. And apparently he and a companion are floating on a boat. So then we flash back to like a week before, and he and his companion are hanging out on a yacht, and they're trying to investigate why these ships have vanished in the area. And his companion thinks that this is totally bullshit, but for some reason still lent the guy a yacht. And then they're just hanging out and they hear a radio broadcast that all of the crew from the ships have been found, but stupefied. And they argue about whether or not that's possible. And then suddenly a man named Siegfried appears on the boat through some unclear mechanism. And he says that he's been around for hundreds of thousands of centuries, but that he is a man like you, not a creature. And then he tells them he'll just let them see where the boats went to. So he makes them all drink a weird potion, and the companion doesn't want to drink the weird potion, but Siegfried makes him through some unclear mechanism that makes him grunt a lot. And then the next thing you know, they're in Atlantis through a temporary astral projection. Siegfried tells them a bit about Atlantis and also name drops Mu, which I knew was going to make Dan very excited. It turns out that Atlantis is a timeless land where no one dies, but they needed metal to reinforce their boats because they're like walls, because they're like a Greek civilization that sank or something. So they've been like stealing boats and paying them in treasure to like get the metal to reinforce the walls. But for some reason, they couldn't just buy the metal. So anyways, it's all good. He takes them to the treasury, but then the companion's like, "Man, I really would like more treasure than 10 times the worth of my yacht," which is what the guy's going to give them. And some unclear stuff happens, but apparently that really pisses off Siegfried, so he strands them on a boat in the middle of the Atlantic with the treasure, though, which a weird twist. But anyways, so then the companion goes insane and says that if he wants the treasure and no one else can have it, so he jumps off the boat that they're stranded on. Just as you hear the sound of like a tanker or something approaching, like a boat horn. So I guess the other guy got saved, but that guy just decided to kill himself for some reason. And that's the end.
Yep. You're well over, but I let you go.
I told you. You're always like, how disappointed are you, Ronald?
You went into a lot more detail than I thought you would. So it was honestly a really good summary. That was like the entire episode.
It was.
I'm disappointed you didn't spend more time arguing about the potion. Because that really felt like the biggest chunk of this whole episode.
A lot of this episode has like sort of three segments, and they're not the segments you'd expect them to be. The first one is them arguing on a boat and then being weirdly blasé about this guy with magic power showing up. The second and very short segment is them being in the lost city of Atlantis. And then the third segment is them hanging out on a boat and going insane.
Yes.
And like, it's not clear to me, but didn't it seem like when they were in Atlantis, there was literally just nothing around?
Yeah, there were no sound effects, at least. So
there was treasure.
Yeah,
I guess there was the treasure room, but he says like, "I don't see any fish
No, there were some workers like patching the wall or some shit.
Yeah. I interpreted it as like they're patching like the dome, you know, that encases the sunken land, you know.
Yeah, they're doing something.
Kind of makes you question how they had the dome in the first place.
Yeah. Well, that's what the Greek craftsmen who aided the Atlanteans on Poseidonis built, because they had their science told them they were going to sink. So that's how I interpreted it. I might be lending this more coherence than it deserves.
It checks out.
It just struck me as really funny how cheap the show sounded. Like you, like with a radio show, you can like create the most fantastical images you can using words, and words are free. So I don't know how this ends up. Like, imagine a really cheap sound stage that is Atlantis.
Yeah, they couldn't even spend an extra sentence being like, "Oh my god, check out the giant squid," you know.
It's like Atlantis has no majesty whatsoever.
Yep.
It's
just a weird guy who shows up on your boat.
Yeah. A fun detail I noted is that Siegfried at one point tells them that, yes, they really are here 50,000 leagues under the sea.
Which is an insane amount of depth.
It's an insane distance. And it's funny because it's like, it's obviously like one-upping Jules Verne. But when Jules Verne used it as a title, he meant the submarine traveled for a distance of 20,000 leagues while underwater. It wasn't 20,000.
The diameter of the Earth is like 8,000 miles. And right. 50,000 leagues is like 160,000 miles.
It is.
Yeah, it's halfway to the moon.
Yeah, it's 150,000 miles.
In the world does that are they?
That's
then?
Really sane. We're not joking.
Yeah. What struck me about Convoy to Atlantis is like how, like, this was made in 1942. Like, think about how stupid we are in 2023. We were so much dumber back then. Like, we haven't even gotten to the moon yet, so we probably still thought the Earth was flat. Like, had no conception of what 50,000 leagues under the sea was going to be, you know? I mean, now that if you go that far under the sea, you just die.
Yeah, you pop out the other side of the Earth and float off into space, unless, of course, the guardians of the far side of the Earth catch you, in which case they'll just kill you, of course, to keep the secret that the Earth is actually flat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're missing out. If we go by kind of classical ancient Mesopotamian and Levantine cosmology, as described in the Babylonian myths and the Hebrew Bible, then clearly where they are is in the depths which exist below Sheol, the underworld. They're down there with Leviathan.
I guess that explains why there's no time here or no death, only life, because they're literally like outside, like God's ordering.
They're literally outside of the world as we understand it cosmologically.
Well, yeah, that would also explain like why, even though he's from Greek times, he said he's like, how old did he say he was?
He said hundreds of thousands of centuries.
Yeah, like, oh god.
But I thought you were from like, you know, whatever, 1500 still, years ago.
Yeah, or... it still says like, oh, 9,000 years before Plato was born. So, you know, they do the math.
I think
like,
it said like Atlantis happened 11,000 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, so before we get into high points and low points, I actually have a new segment I want to throw at you guys, which is called Lawrence's Dialogue Corner.
This because it felt like the Neanderthal one.
Yeah. That's another thing that confused me, though. The Neanderthal one shows that this guy had some kind of an accurate idea of prehistory, and then here he just shits the bed utterly. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I'll be able to speak on that a little bit. Yeah. But
let's do Lawrence's Dialogue Corner first. Okay. So first off, you know, it's very important to sort of, in a story, you got to establish, you know, when and where it's taking place, and you got to do it subtly, which is why this is such a great line. I can't believe it's 1934. And then you also, this is a horror story, so you got to tell people that something isn't quite right. But again, subtlety is key. So something has happened. Something that isn't ordinary.
And then, so it's a very much shades of, that's weird. That's weird.
And then, of course, you know, when something unusual happens, it's good for a character to comment on it so that the audience will know. Thus, that doesn't make sense. Nobody could drug three boats worth of people. And that one's extra good because you actually could drug three boats worth of people. But that creates sort of this tension in the mind of the, like, listener. Anyways, I'm a man like you. I'm not a creature. You know, again, to establish the baseline humanity. And finally, why this place is as modern and advanced as our civilization. You'll find that in many ways, we're more advanced. And I guess the last one.
Coming but from you... a 100,000-year-old immortal guy.
And then finally, but you can't. It's not right, which is great because it highlights the moral conundrum at the heart of the episode. Yeah, so that's being Lawrence's dialogue corner of just lots that I thought
I love it. Fun.
You made a comment about this earlier, and maybe I missed this. Was this the same writer as the Neanderthal?
Yeah, a lot of these old radio shows tended to be written by like the same person, and this one is written by Scott Bishop, I think, who also wrote the Neanderthal.
Ah, cool.
Well, we know he's capable of better work. That's going to be my backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of little tidbits in here though that are pulling on a lot of threads in Kukri and also superseded science. But I don't know what's the next segment though. I don't want to.
Yeah, let's do Kukri and superseded science in Dan quarter.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
From now on with Dan's on. Let's just give him a little quarter to talk about some weird thing that the episode reminded him of. I mean, the Neanderthal one somehow led to him discussing the Albanian pirates. So let's see where this one goes.
Well, it's kind of weird because I was like, when I came on to this one, I was like, you know what? I want to start doing a Kukri and superseded science section, but I don't have anything to say.
So, good thing Dan came in.
Yeah, thank God.
I'm always happy to be the ringer.
Yeah, hit us. Well, first off, though, are you going to explain where Lemuria comes from?
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah. So we can start with the superseded science part.
Yeah.
So you'll remember the discussion Siegfried had about the continent of Atlantis sinking before your continent had even risen. Right. So he's talking about North and South America being underwater while Atlantis is above the water. Lemuria is another one of these famous kind of lost worlds. Lemuria as a concept began life as an attempt to explain why there were so many affinities between the wildlife on the island of Madagascar and the wildlife in India. So that you would find, you know, lemurs on either side of that enormous gap. And also, I mean, and really, it might even, I don't know if this, I don't remember the original conception of it, but the people of Madagascar speak Malagasy languages, which are related to languages from Indonesia. It was not settled by people from the African continent. It was settled by seafarers from the Indonesian islands, which is pretty wild. So this was all before the concept of continental drift had been proposed and wasn't really in the offing. There was some idea about continents shifting position, but most of the geological theorizing was about, you know, we had fossils, we had like rocks that we knew had to come from underneath the ocean. They had to be deposited in marine sediment, but they were above ground. Well, what can explain that? And so there was an idea formed that there might have been a possibly cyclical rising and falling of continents from under the ocean, so that's how they were able to explain this phenomenon that had been noticed within the geological record of sometimes these places are underwater, sometimes they are not. And so the idea was perhaps there's some sort of cycle or there's some sort of mechanism whereby some continents are underwater, others rise, and then those others sink again. Lemuria was a proposed continent that had existed in the Indian Ocean between Madagascar and India that had, in the meantime, since, you know, animals had been able to cross it, had sunk. This got really, really ran with by the Theosophists. I'm sure you're all familiar with the late 19th century to early 20th century kind of occult wisdom kook religion-y thing. Blavatsky, yes, Lawrence in the chat with the drop. Helen Blavatsky. This they had a whole regime worked out of a kind of cosmic and honestly extremely racist and racialized history of a history of kind of occult comings and goings of great races of the past. And so they tied into that. There was another proposed continent called Mu, which existed in the Pacific Ocean. Siegfried, as he's talking about it, talks about it as being to the west of Atlantis, and sort of considering like, well, this would have been before North and South America had arisen. Atlantis and Mu were two continents where oceans are now, and there was an ocean where the Americas are now. Also, you'll note that the timeline seems very compressed for all this, because he's only talking in terms of like 1 million years, 2 million years. This is because the full depth of time was not well understood in the early 20th century. It was getting there. It was actually around this time. Honestly, if this writer had been keeping up with the geological literature, he would have had a better idea of that. Scientists were closing
Dan.
In on
Get him.
A better... he was not... This guy was working with like 1910s style science, you know, in the 1940s. But so that's where that stuff is coming from. It's from a now superseded theory of continental change. Now, of course, we know, and we have proof and evidence that continents are basically floating on the great magma sea under the crust, and that convection currents within that magma move those plates around. So that's why we have, you know, you have some continents shifting position. You do get, you know, sea levels change. So you get, you know, they're in a certain shape and part of it's underwater, part of it's not. And that changes over time. They crash together and make a mountain. Here's a fun fact. Everywhere where there's a mountain chain is where there used to be an ocean.
Hell yeah.
Because mountains are formed by great land masses crashing together. So you have to have non-land masses until they hit, right? So the Himalayas, that's where India bumped into Asia. The Appalachian mountains are all part of one mountain chain that formed back when Pangaea crashed together. And the mountains of Scotland and Morocco are all part of the same mountain chain.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, because so that kind of makes sense why you find like fish fossils in the mountains.
Exactly. You'll find exactly like if you want to find fish fossils, you a lot of times you go to the mountains, which is, you know, it's a crazy kind of thing to say, but
yeah,
but anyway.
That is weird.
So that's the superseded science part.
I think we've heard enough of Daniel's like facts and information. I would like to point out my knowledge of Lemuria, which comes from Marvel Comics, the Namor the Submariner series, in which Lemuria is basically the Shelbyville to Atlantis's Springfield, and they have access to the Serpent Crown, which you wear on your head, and it can control minds and fire bolts of lightning and shit.
Yeah, now I actually have another segment I'd like to introduce now, which is Ronnie roast Dan for being a nerd. Ronnie, you have 2 minutes. Go for it.
What do you got?
Well, I mean. First of all, we all know the Earth is only 6,000 years old, so like all this garbage about like millions of years ago, it's like, come on.
Yeah. Dan has fallen for the devil's lies and is probably will not taste glory after he dies.
I will be cast into the outer darkness along with Atlantis.
He also believes in the devil's greatest trick, dinosaurs.
I in fact worship them instead of the Lord.
Yeah. I can't wait until they finally put out an expose that reveals that dinosaurs are just made up, and that's like the day Daniel hangs himself.
You know, can't wait for that.
Yeah, I don't want Daniel to hang himself. I like the other part.
It's got dark pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't want it to happen, but it'd be funny if it did happen.
I once read a Jack Chick tract where I think it was saying that dinosaurs were demons. So when the Ark thing happened, the devil made them all attack the Ark, and God had to send angels down to protect it with flaming swords. And I'm like, God damn, this is pretty cool.
That's what should have been in that Noah movie.
Yeah, instead they had those rock things, right? The water.
Yeah. He got in hot water for incorporating stuff that actually has some pretty deep roots in Hebraic and Near Eastern folklore.
Yeah, people need to read the book.
Everyone
of Enoch
thought he was just making up stuff and wasn't following the Bible.
Yeah. That movie was pretty awesome because, like, the third act is like Noah deciding that all of humanity should die, so he tries to, like, kill Emma Watson, who's pregnant with a baby.
You know what? Based.
he's taking God's choice one step further.
Yeah, anyways, let's go, I don't know, any high points on this? I think it's pretty funny that their whole thing is just trying to steal comparatively small amounts of metal from boats, when it kind of seems like they could just go get metal from the sea bottom.
Well, keep in mind, this is 1934. This is during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Atlantis isn't having a depression, right?
It's global, man. You can't just assume.
Not even Atlantis was spared.
I mean, if anything, the fact that they have so much gold suggests they're still on the gold standard, and we all know how depressive that is on the economy.
That's true. That's very true. I would think it was funny if Atlantis had Hoovervilles, and they don't even know why they call them Hoovervilles.
For some reason,
I spent a long time trying to tease out like what the lesson of this radio show was, and I guess it's like, you know, greed is bad or something.
I think it's like. Yeah, that might have been it in the
section. No, greed is good.
No, that dude decided to kill himself.
Well, yeah, but the other guy got the money, yeah?
I know, the other guy took it with him to the bottom of the ocean.
He got away with the gold.
I think. Again, everything that happens after...
No, you're talking about the other guy. I'm talking about the guy that got the gold.
Yeah, but the other guy was like, I'm the only one who's allowed to have this treasure, and then decided to jump off the boat instead of just trying to not let other people have his treasure.
Yeah, so I'm saying he got the gold.
Yeah, and then he drowned.
I thought it was implied that he was like heaving the chest over and then holding onto the chest while it sank into the deep.
Yeah, and he died.
No, but I guess, he got the gold.
Okay. He did get the gold.
Yeah, I guess if the Egyptians were right, that dude's pretty set in the afterlife.
He said exactly. He's taking it with him.
No service, but he's got enough gold he can hire somebody to get there.
I do have a high point, and. Okay. It's a high point in terms of something I really enjoyed about this listening experience. So it's not necessarily something that's good about the show. But I thought it was amazing and hilarious that we basically have a Bermuda Triangle story 20 years before anyone talked about the Bermuda Triangle.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, think about it. We're in the Atlantic Ocean. There are mysterious disappearances of boats. And no one can explain it, and they go out and find it, and it's tied in with Atlantis somehow. That was, did you guys ever watch In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy? Or like catch any reruns when you were babies in the 80s?
Yeah.
Oh God. You guys weren't babies in the 80s. Shit.
I mean, I was born in 89, Dan. I'm sorry.
I do remember that show being on, but I don't remember the contents of any of the episodes.
Okay. Well, it's a real treasure trove of 70s kook bullshit. I highly recommend it. It's probably
on YouTube. Leonard Nimoy, anyway, the guy who directed Three Men and a Baby?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know he had an earlier career as a presenter of documentaries?
He's got an even earlier career than that, but we don't need to go into it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not really that important. But anyway, I remember distinctly as a kid watching the episode of In Search Of about the Bermuda Triangle, where one of their proposed kind of explanations was that it had something to do with Atlantis. That there was some sort of highly energetic Atlantean technology that could, you know, destroy boats or airplanes, you know, or whatever.
Isn't that just the default, like, 70s kook shit? It's just Atlantis or crystals or past lives, one of the three.
Oh, yeah. It's all very boilerplate. It's fascinating. I'm not going to get into all the ins and outs. But I thought that was really, very interesting that we have essentially the Bermuda Triangle story as it gelled through the mid-60s into the 70s, into like 1974, 75 was kind of the high water mark of that stuff. It's when they were making movies and best-selling books. 20, 30 years before that, we had this dashed off story that was basically the same premise.
I didn't realize that like the leading kook theory of the Bermuda Triangle was Atlantis.
I say leading kook theory. I mean, it's the one that I recall being associated with it the most.
Gotcha. No, I mean, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I just didn't realize that. That is very funny.
Yeah. So I think it's an interesting little wrinkle in the history of American kookery that you had this sort of premonition of the Bermuda Triangle thing. You know,
were there also like millions of other Bermuda Triangles, and Bermuda Triangle just had like the branding to carry that name.
Well, like sort of like areas that are prone to accidents or something.
Yeah, there's probably billions of them, right? Like,
right. And there are
trillions.
You know, people are on the planet.
I don't raise it further, Ronald. Look,
if you can get 50,000 leagues down, there are trillions of the Bermuda Triangles.
You got to keep digging.
Have you ever heard of a planet in triangles before?
I mean, if you think about it, space is infinitely divisible. So, yes, there are infinite triangles everywhere.
No, it's not.
Oh, as you get down to the Planck length. Constant. Yeah, that's right. Can you?
Yeah, but it's infinitely big, bro.
Yeah, like...
Yeah, you know, it is.
unless you're talking about the observable universe, then I guess...
And then it's not, yeah.
Okay, there's but a crack...
It's infinite in the sense that it's still increasing, I guess.
There's a practically infinite number of, like, triangles you could draw in any space, dude.
Yeah.
I know you're like... 100.
I love that we're working in some Pythagoras in here.
Wow, Rahul is just wilding out today.
He's got nothing to say, and he's got to say it loud.
That's really my high points. I know I've talked a lot, but my high points are the being able. It was fun for me to be able to pinpoint where in the history of the development of science and pseudoscience this lies.
Hey, I have a question for you, yeah. Dan. So when continents pull apart again, do they pull apart where they had come together, or is it a
you have a geology question?
Yeah. It depends. It's not really dependent on anything, sort of like, because like typically, I mentioned, like the Appalachians are part of what had been the same contiguous mountain chain with the mountains in the Atlas Mountains in Morocco and the, I forget the name of the mountains in Scotland, which is, I should be ashamed. The Grampian Mountains in Scotland. There we go. But that was an instance where what had been a unified landmass that crashed together to make those mountains starts pulling apart at around the mountainous orogeny, they call it, so that was pulling apart. So that there is, like, you know, that is one case where it did come apart where it had come together. In other cases, it's really, it all has to do with, like, where the energy in the mantle is yanking things apart. So right now there is a rift forming in Africa that will soon split off East Africa, like kind of the Horn of Africa, Kenya down to Mozambique. That portion of the continent is being pulled apart off of the other portion of the continent. So that's why there's that, if you look at it, it's called the Great Rift Valley. It goes, it's at the sort of the north coast of Eritrea and Ethiopia. And you follow a line south, it's these series of really deep canyons and lakes going thousands and thousands and thousands of miles south into, like, South Africa. And it's because it's being, those basins are forming, right? It's being pulled apart and low portions are being formed, which are filling with water and will eventually be filled with seawater once it completely separates.
So A, new beachfront properties opening up.
Yeah.
And B, how can you trust anything when the ground beneath you is being torn apart?
Yeah. Also,
it's such an incredible
now name. What was that word that was like erogenous, whatever, Dan?
Oh,
erogenous zone, I believe.
The erogenous zone.
No, say it.
It's orogeny. It's the geology nerd term for mountain uplift.
Okay, so check this out. She pull on my orogeny till I make a mountain.
She pull on my orogeny till I rift.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give I'm gonna give Lawrence's 3 out of 10. Dan's
3 out of 10?
3.5 out of 10.
Man, you're a fucking tough grader. I don't know why we gave you that job.
Because like, you mean nothing to the conversation.
Yeah, well, I mean, you check the podcast.
Those who can't do, teach, baby.
You're not teaching us anything. You're just man.
Those who can't do, judge, I guess.
Yeah. Those who can't do,
harsh, don't judge all of you.
Those who can't do, harshly criticize. Anyway. Let's get to some low points, I guess, which is just that it's dumb and sucks a lot.
I think if the listeners out can't tell that there's really nothing in this episode by the fact that we continually to talk about geology and like weird old earth theories rather than the actual episode itself.
Yeah. Everything that happens in it is
Sorry. I got really fixated on the fact that it was made in 1942, so I just kept on thinking about, like, you know, 30 years later, it's like, you know, Grandpa, what did you do during the war? Were you in the were you in Europe or were you in the Pacific? Oh no, I wrote some dipshit radio shows about Atlanta. I was really doing my part.
One of the ones we listened to earlier aired like a week after Pearl Harbor, which we thought might explain why it was so terrible, because we were just very distracted.
Just put on one of the videos. No one's listening.
Yeah.
Got to keep the troops entertained, though.
Yep. Yeah. With vague tales of Atlantis.
You make fun, but this is what beat the Nazis. It was listening to stuff like this motivated our boys.
Beat the Nazis.
They were listening to Atlantis radio plays and beating off to Betty Grable, and that's what won the war.
Yeah. Do you think the Nazis could have made a show like this? No, it would have probably been a lot higher production value, but also had a lot of unfortunate race shit in it.
Oh, they would have gone so hard on the occult race stuff about Atlantis.
Yeah, but the microphone quality would have been primo.
Yeah. But yeah,
a little antiquated racism would have made this more interesting.
I was actually trying to figure out if the fact that the guy is named Siegfried meant anything. It kind of seems like it means something, but I couldn't figure out what, because it's not like he's particularly evil, you know?
Well, I mean, there's of course the famous Siegfried in the Ring cycle.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a hell of a German name, and it was right, you know, while we were at war with Germany. So, like, maybe the most German name, honestly. It's like that in Hans, right?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
I mean, from a foreigner trying to think of a German name, at least.
Fritz?
Yeah, hey. I had Fritz, that's a good one. Fritz. My German name in German class was Dietrich.
Dietrich.
Yeah. Dietrich.
Wait, you had to have a German name in German class?
Yeah, you pick a German name. I went with Dietrich because that's the modern version of the name Theodoric, who is my favorite Gothic king.
Of course. Of course.
That's pretty fucked up. Like, you're just in, like, some school class and you just get a new name.
Well, we did that all the way up through in Spanish class when we were in, like, elementary school. I don't know why. And then I went to German class in high school and she's like, what's your name, you know? A wie heißt du? And I'm like, ich heiße Wilhelm. And she looked at me so weird because apparently we weren't doing that. And I didn't know. Hey, guess who was born 20 days before this aired?
Hitler?
Yeah.
He was a baby Hitler.
He was a very aggressive toddler.
He's 0 years old.
It was very impressive for a toddler, and also very evil. Just really.
I would like to clarify, I didn't say impressive. I said aggressive. Okay.
Oh, aggressive. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not impressed by Hitler. But
I mean,
no.
You know, I disagree with him all you want. It is impressive to become Chancellor of Germany as a baby.
Okay, so here's some things first off, Michael Eisner was born 20 days before this aired, which I don't know. And then,
yeah, speaking of famous Nazis. Happened...
Anyways, a bunch of depressing stuff happened because World War II was raging. But some
How
more
do you
music.
Know the birthday of Michael Eisner?
Because Wikipedia has it for some reason.
You look up the date on Wikipedia?
Yeah, I'm just curious what happened.
Okay. I thought you were just like. Looking at the date, I know Michael Eisner was born 2 weeks before that.
I have to know his sign and his turn-ons and turn-offs so that I know if we're compatible or not.
Yeah, the CEO of Disney from the 90s, that's like your celebrity crush.
Yeah, anyways, so a couple of things. The one thing, Joe Louis knocked out someone named Abe Simon on the sixth round, which I've read as Abe Simpson and was amused by. And then born on this day, Michael Yorick, actor. So, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. He was Romeo and Juliet, The Three Cabaret, or Cabaret, Murder on the Orient Express, Logan's Run. You know.
He's in a season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah. And he was born on this day, so his parents might have listened to this.
This in the hospital.
Oh, I mean, God. Probably not, because he was born in England, and this was not. But
how
popular
was this show?
Probably not.
Not the specific episode, but the show.
I honestly don't know. I don't even know if ratings like existed as a concept back then.
Yeah,
but there was so much less entertainment back then, so probably the market share was bigger.
Well,
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Yeah, and like
looking
this is AM radio?
Looking it up. So Dark Fantasy, this particular series, it launched
which
in
is
November
our
of 1941.
Such a bad title.
Yeah,
it launched in November of 1941 and was done by June of 1942. So from Oklahoma City,
neat. Yeah,
heart of the Midwest.
But, yeah.
Oh, Timothy McVeigh's yeah. Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Oh, hey, you know, guess who else was born on this day? The day this aired, not Timothy McVeigh. Oh.
Okay, I was gonna be like, what?
Timothy McZahn.
Yeah. The FBI agent who put him up to do it.
You know, oh, Timothy McZahn, I can't explain why, but that kind of feels like the final thing to which all of American culture has been building. Like the end man, the perfect American.
Who was actually born?
No one. That was just a joke, Ronald.
Oh, I was waiting for somebody.
Yeah, I thought you were really going to say someone.
I mean, you have the Wikipedia up, so.
Yeah, Mr. Fancy Pants, you have the Wikipedia.
Well,
I
okay.
won't have access to it.
Okay, guess he was born 1 month and 26 years after this episode.
26
aired.
Years.
Yeah, 1 month and 26 years.
What?
The Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah. No, that's what
I think
that's
this
what
is legitimately a game show on Fox. Like, guess when someone was born.
Actually, I'm looking at Timothy McVeigh's like entry on Google, and for some reason it has a movies entry, like he's an actor.
Oh no.
Oh, it's movies about him.
I guess the movies are
like documentaries, yeah.
The movies are Oklahoma City, Bowling for Columbine, Wanderlust, yeah. and Ethos.
He was great in Ethos. I mean, it's a shame about everything else, but
I mean that is really funny, like how Adolf Hitler has an IMDb page.
Really?
Hey, he actually gets a lot of entries because of stock footage.
Weird.
Anyways, and I think Ethos, A Time for Change, it's hosted by Woody Harrelson, and I mean, based on everything, I think it might be a little bit about how the government did Oklahoma City. Anyways,
sure.
Let's. I don't know. You guys want to do a game or something? We've wandered. Yeah.
Rahul has a point. A point. Like a real one.
God okay. help us all.
Okay. So I felt like I know this is ridiculous that I'm like talking.
Is
shit
it power about levels of Siegfried?
No. Yeah. That's a good one. No, I feel like these two guys got special treatment, and I don't know why.
Yeah,
because they were taken down to Atlantis. I'm like,
and
why?
Shown around. Like, did they do that with like the cruise ships and stuff?
Certainly not, right?
I assumed they did, and then they drugged them.
Why?
That's what they said. They drugged them afterwards. I don't know. Make them forget.
Why would they? What?
Stupid forgetful crew.
Stupid forgetful crew.
They're calling Siegfried the 1940s Bill Cosby.
Oh no,
Jesus.
Ronnie out here with his Rolodex of awful humans.
Yeah, he's a relevant reference for basically anything we say.
He drugs them and astral projects them, and is that really that different than what Cosby did? Honestly,
I'd like to see probably. Siegfried do a tight five.
Okay, anyways, I got one other thing I want to read to you just from clicking around in the Wikipedia page from March 1942. So this is a tale of heroism. So a man, this is about Commander George Snavely Rents, who was a Navy chaplain. So it was during the abandonment of the sinking Houston that Commander Rents entered the water and attained partial safety, along with other crewmen on a destroyed airplane's float. Seeing extreme overcrowding and the fact that the pontoon was taking on water, he attempted to relinquish his space and life jacket to wounded survivors nearby. He declared, You men are young. You have lived the majority part. I have lived the major part of my life, and I am willing to go.
Wait, is this guy Axis or Ally? What is happening?
This is
did he have that accent?
Yes. It says right on his Wikipedia page. Also, he sounded like a cheap vampire. Anyways,
okay, carry on.
According to
why would you not just do that in your regular voice, though?
I don't know. According to Houston Survivor Private Jim Gee, no one would oblige the generous, fearless chaplain. Each time Rents attempted to leave, he was brought back by his shipmates. He ultimately relinquished his life jacket to Seaman First Class Walter L. Beeson, who recounts that Rents told me his heart was failing him, told me he couldn't last much longer. Following a brief prayer, the chaplain gave the life jacket to Beeson, who refused to put it on.
What?
So what happened?
He just left, but he kept trying to heroically sacrifice him, but the guys kept going, nah, we're good, dude.
Guys, we can stand. We don't need life
jackets. Really need the life jacket.
Man, that's like the improv performer that's trying to do yes and just everyone shuts him down.
Yeah, I mean, he did ultimately die heroically, and the other men lived because he did it, but also it's very funny. He just kept going. Matt, I think he might have actually been lying about having a heart attack, honestly, just to get the guy to let him. Yeah.
Yeah, at that point, it's just like he's all in on sacrificing himself.
See, I think he needed to sacrifice himself to earn God's favor, and then he failed, so God smote him.
Well, I think he was just doing it at first to be nice, but then, like, once you do it once and no one accepts, you're like, wow.
Fuck you guys. I'm gonna look like a real tool
if no one accepts it. Yeah. Gotta keep doubling down.
Yeah. Anyways, you guys want to do a game or just recommendations and cautions? I'm cool either way.
What's the game?
Warhammer 40K or Norway.
Oh, we gotta do that with Dan on.
Okay.
And Ronnie, we gotta make him suffer.
Yeah. Okay, so I have 10 entries, although I think we're probably not going to end up using all 10. We'll just
do a few.
Yeah, let's just do two for each of you. Fair?
Let's just do buzz-in style.
Okay.
Let's see how many of these Dan can get. We're Ronnie. Okay. I don't know how good you are at your Warhammer.
See, this is
Ronnie.
This is good.
I know slightly more about Warhammer now that I've seen Zack Snyder's new movie.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this is going to be a good warm-up for Ronnie has asked me to explain Warhammer to him for when we review Rebel Moon.
Oh, shit, really? What is the connection?
Oh, it's just that he ripped off a bunch of imagery.
Oh, that's awesome. We gotta watch this
I
movie.
Hope it's the good imagery.
You under no circumstances have to watch this movie.
Please don't. Please don't. Under every circumstance, you need to listen to the bonus episode of Thronderdome that comes out about it. But no, don't.
I will listen to that.
But don't put yourselves through it.
Anyway,
yeah, let's start the game.
Okay, so buzz in rules. Just first person who thinks they know either way, buzz in. Tell me if it exists. If it does exist, does it have a dumb name? If it has a dumb name, what is the dumb name? So first off, the British sport of cricket. Does that exist in Warhammer 40K?
Yes.
Does it have a dumb name?
Yes.
What's the dumb name?
I think it's phonetically the same as cricket, but it's like, you know, a Y in cricket instead of an I.
Starts with like K, that. Like Mortal Kombat style.
Now this is devastating. You actually went too smart. It's called grass. It's called grasshopper, Ronnie. It's called grasshopper. Yeah.
What? Oh my god.
It's a very arcane and obscure game popular in the Britannia system.
Britannia.
Oh boy.
Oh my god.
Wow, yeah. that's not really indicative of Warhammer 40K names.
Hey, wait, Lawrence, is the Britannia system where the Praetorian Imperial Guard come from?
I think it's just a one-off joke that's never mentioned again.
Ah, damn it. Okay,
well, that would be the Britannia system.
They literally all I know is that they play cricket there.
They play grasshopper.
Oh yes, yeah.
That's the
They definitely drink tea and eat crumpets.
Yeah,
I have a crumpet right now.
Now,
everyone in Britannia has really weird opinions about trans people.
And the men have dumb mustaches, I bet.
Terrible dental plans.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
They're all Austin Powers like.
That would be great if Austin Powers made a comeback. I think it's time.
I mean,
know, that'd be so good.
Aren't they making a new Austin Powers movie?
Yeah, does
they try to inject a little levity.
Anyway,
okay, what's the next one, Lawrence?
Do bathrooms exist in Warhammer 40K?
No.
Yes.
Ooh, we got a split field.
Ooh, we got a
Okay, I'm giving you.
No, everyone pees in their suits.
Okay, Dan, you think they exist?
I'm saying yes.
Do they have a dumb name?
Yes.
What's the dumb name?
The dumb name is some kind of bullshit Latin, so it's going to be like the defecarium.
Okay, I'm giving you 2 points for that. The truth is, I don't know. They never mentioned them.
Because they never mentioned bathrooms?
No, Warhammer books are all about like people going on adventures and stuff. So the ones I've heard have never mentioned a bathroom.
That makes me right.
Yeah, so I'm giving you both 2 points.
That just reminds me.
I want 200 points.
That just reminds me of when J.K. Rowling had to clarify that.
Oh, like, my God.
Before bathrooms existed in Harry Potter, they just shit on the floor and like used the magic spell to disappear the ship.
Or shit in their pants. Or... And it's like, what?
Speaking of fucking perfs from Britannia.
Yeah.
That needed to be clarified.
All that woman had to do was write the last word of the Deathly Hallows and then never say anything else ever again, and she could have been a billionaire. And instead she had to tell us what she thought about trans people.
I mean, she's still a billionaire. She's just a billionaire everyone hates.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, like a billionaire. Everyone being a...
Yeah.
I thought she wasn't a billionaire because she gave away like all her money. Is that not true?
I think she gave away enough to tick slightly under having $1,000 million. Yeah,
but I mean, she's still for all practical purposes, infinity money. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's still making money.
That wouldn't be infinite to me.
But that's because you like literally try to buy like all of Abu Dhabi or some shit, dude.
Oh, dude, it wouldn't even buy me a fraction of Abu Dhabi. I gotta.
You
go
would try. No.
Hell yeah, I would. Up top.
Yeah.
can I make a confession right now? It took me like well into my teen years to realize that Abu Dhabi was a real place and not just something made up for Garfield to send normal.
Or something from Aladdin or something.
Okay. Anyways, the firefighters existed Warhammer 40K?
No.
No.
Okay. Does anyone think they do?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and what are they called? Fire killers.
Huh. They're called anti-flanteens. I don't know why.
Never gonna guess that.
What? I was just thinking that they thought a fire is cleansing. So
I was gonna say flame slayers.
I mean, those exist in Warhammer Age of Sigmar, but they're not firefighters. They're dwarves who are angry.
Oh, I didn't
all the
know
time.
You were.
That's
a
right.
Fan
yeah,
of,
that's
Age
the.
Of Sigmar, Ronnie.
Yeah, Ronnie, these are the guys I showed you as my ideal male form that I'm reaching for when I go to the gym.
Rahul?
Or... No, I meant the fire slayers, the big old beer belly, but the powerful squat leg.
Yeah, yeah, no, those guys.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like Rahul.
Yeah, that's me.
They're all based off you. Okay, yeah. Right.
Rahul is famous for his giant flaming red mohawk. And his gold tattoos that protect him from harm.
It's the beautiful thing about this podcast. No one knows what Rahul looks like. It's all sound. He could look like anything.
He could be an AI.
Yeah.
Let your imagination run wild like it does during this radio show.
Yeah.
Convoy to Atlantis.
Yep. Okay. Next up, the railways exist. Do railways exist in Warhammer 40K?
Oh, they gotta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they have a dumb sci-fi name?
Ooh, you bet. Definitely.
What are they called?
They are called, because you know this all has to go in with like the, you know, gothic industrial, right? So we got to have like tram lines of some sort. A lot of hazard stripes all over them. They are called rail convoys. Damn it. No, that's not it. I don't
tank
know.
Engines.
Auto platforms.
I mean, they're just called railways is kind of the thing.
Oh, really? Come on.
Because I read them in a book where they weren't really like interested in messing with it. Although they did have the orcs build one.
What was that?
Oh, that would be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Still called a train, but then the Raven Guard guy had to sneak on it and kill the orc guy who made it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, the idea of a super train.
Warhammer Murder on the Orient Express would be exactly the same.
I mean, it would be different, but it would still be on a train.
Because it wouldn't be a mystery. It would just be everyone murdering each other.
Yeah. And
it would be like every time somebody died, they all cheer.
Yeah. Okay, let's do two more. Actually, let's do three more. Okay, the pharaohs exist in Warhammer 40K.
Yeah.
What are they called?
They're called, like, whatever the friggin', like, Fokmet or whatever.
Fokmet! Fokmet!
What are those guys called? Fucking,
like the...
No,
the Tomb King guys?
Yeah.
The Nekmet? Yeah.
They're called like Sand Kings.
That's, man, Ronnie is just somehow, and I can't explain why, extremely tapped into Warhammer Age of Sigmar. He's not here at all. But he's just rattling off. No, they're called the Tomb Kings, and I'm pretty sure there's some dark elves running around, and I bet they're led by a guy named Malekith, and we're like, where are you getting this? Not Warhammer, though. Anyways, they're called Pharaohs.
Pharaohs.
They didn't try.
Okay.
Okay. Shit. Now, here's the, does war exist in Warhammer 40K?
No.
No.
I'm going to guess no.
I'm going to buck everyone and say yes.
Oh, what?
Does it have a stupid name?
Jesus.
So there's, some kind of like high... You know what? No, there's, so there has to be an official high gothic term for warfare. Okay, I'm going to say, yeah, it has a stupid name.
What's the stupid name?
Balerium.
God, that would be pretty good. I think it's just called war, though.
Ah! Okay. It is in the grim darkness of the future. There is only war.
Yeah. And finally, does Birmingham exist? You know, the English
Birmingham, Alabama?
Yeah.
No, the English one. Does it have a dumb name?
Oh, it's probably in the Britannia system.
Well, Ronnie's getting to answer. Ronnie, do you think Birmingham has a dumb name?
It's named after Birmingham, Alabama, a.k.a. Stinkton.
So it's just called... you're saying it's just called Stinkton?
Ronnie's been trying for years to gaslight me into believing my own home is called Stinkton.
But
you were born in Stinkton? Oh my god, dude.
Well, that's embarrassing.
Well, they had to rename it after Dan moved there, of course. Nah, it's just called Birmingham, and they note that it's a dark and terrible city devoid of all culture.
Yeah, that sounds like Daniel's hometown.
That's pretty funny. And I think that's a bit of a Spiro Agnew must work there or something kind of joke, because if I recall correctly, Birmingham is where Games Workshop started.
Oh,
I thought it was just them being cool. I don't know, Irish or something.
or at least like a lot of the early kind of Warhammer guys working on it had that kind of black country background. You know, they weren't Londoners, you know, they were Midlands guys.
Yeah. Okay. And that's it. The final scores, although it kind of got really wild there, are Rahul 3, Dan 4, Ronald 1, and Ronnie 2.
Not bad. Not a bad showing, everybody.
Yeah. I'm actually more impressed that you were able to keep track of the scores.
Some of those
honestly, I think the scoring kind of works a lot like Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Wait, I could have sworn that Rahul got
300.
Does
that mean we have to do a hoedown at the end?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I got...
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's something Rahul's going to do off the air, you know.
Hoedown?
Yeah. Emphasis on the hoe.
Record it and send it to us, though.
Yeah. You know, for our personal use.
Yeah.
Anyways,
let's do... Has this been our, like, wildest and wooliest episode? It might be.
Definitely the wooliest.
Yep.
It might be the longest episode where we like talked the least about the thing that we watched.
Yeah, well, we introduced three new segments, which I'm probably going to forget exist by next time.
Yeah, we definitely have to stick to that though.
There was just so much clicking during that episode. You know, it was so annoying.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? At first, when it settled down, I thought that maybe it was supposed to be like a heartbeat sound effect.
Oh my god, that, I thought that too for a second. I was like, some Atlantic heartbeat or something.
Yep.
Right.
Famous Atlantic heartbeat.
Well, I don't know, obviously.
I was fine with the old timey sound, but like by the end of it, it just became unlistenable.
Because of the constant skipping. What happened?
I did look, I found, I did some research I found a notice on one of the places that was hosting it that said it was due to the record. It was recording from a record that had been scratched. So,
well, that makes sense for the kind of sound it was. The rhythm of a record spinning.
Right. Yeah, that was my guess too, but I was like, is that how they record these? But apparently it is.
Yeah.
I mean, this is legitimately though, this is like an 80-year-old thing. So it is kind of astonishing that like this is older than our, I think that's
absolutely.
It is really cool. It's like digging up a really boring and incoherent Mesopotamian tablet. It's cool.
Just imagine how this podcast is going to sound in 80 years.
Oh, so you think that Bad Time Radio is the one thing that's going to survive the apocalypse?
Absolutely.
We're going to canticle for Leibowitz, man.
I was going to say it's going to be canticle for Leibowitz, but with our, you know, dunderhead opinions.
I really, really, really hope that they decide that Rahul is the devil. Because otherwise the entire, like, new society is going to be built around lifting and getting swole, and I don't think that they're going to be able to sustain that.
Yeah, what? They're going to put
that's
the dogs...
only thing that would sustain you.
Put the dogs in charge.
They're not going to have access to protein, Rahul. How are they going to have gains if they don't have protein on demand?
As long as you're consistent over time, you know? And besides, the people who
are... But you haven't even been listening to his sermons.
Yeah.
I just think it'd be really funny if this podcast was the only source of information like future generations had about like Bill Cosby and Adolf Hitler and Timothy McVeigh.
You know what? That'd be accurate. That part would all be accurate.
They come away and think that movies were primarily about like a nudity delivery system and that occasionally had a plot because they just sort of listened to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, what is the Britannia system?
Yeah. You know, there's
mention of this god Austin Powers.
They seem intriguing. To worship him regularly.
So, I read this on something awful, but I think it's true. Like, after humans all die, right? If aliens ever come here and start doing archaeology, they're 100% going to think that an elf is just another kind of person, right? Like, they're
if they're like digging into like our media and stuff
If they're just like digging up like our tattered texts and stuff, they're just gonna be like, oh yeah, they had, you know, white people, black people from Asia or whatever, and elves, you know.
Elves, well, Smurfs.
Right, elves have Smurfs. Like magical powers, so I don't know.
They'll determine elves exist just by digging up Daniel's skeleton.
He was more of a leprechaun.
In a giant tomb, in a giant pyramid.
The time
yeah.
That reminds me of a joke I made at Daniel's expense earlier. Because we were talking about how the star of Rebel Moon, Sophia Boutella, looks great and she's actually older than Daniel. And it was like, if aliens looked at like Daniel and Sophia Boutella, they would not think they're the same species.
Here we have this beautiful statuesque Algerian lady who's a year older than me but looks 20 years younger than me, and here we have the short, squat, bald figure here,
some sort of failed offshoot of the
do get buffs for that
also, right? So. I think it's weird that apparently Daniel's baldness is so profound you can determine it from his skeleton.
That'd be a good name for a book about Daniel, just profoundly bald.
Yeah, anyways, enough of roasting our beloved co-host Dan. Let's do some fucking recommendations and cautions before he, you know, cries and runs away.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. That's great.
All right.
Is that my cue to go first?
Sure, if you want.
All right, let me dry my tears for a little bit. pull myself together.
I know that you're not used to roasting from Ronnie, right?
This is unheard of. I think he's trying to show off for you guys. I don't know what's going into him.
Well, it's working.
It's prison rules, dude. You beat the shit out of the weakest guy there to show you're dominant.
Okay.
Strongest ape.
So anyway, but yeah, I got some recommendations. One, get a gamer keyboard. The shit rules. It lights up with all kinds of fun colors. It's got Ruth Bader Ginsburg, it's very heavy and the keys are clacky. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
And Daniel, can you tell us what kind of mechanical keys did you choose?
What do you mean, what kind?
There's like these MX cherries and MX rubies and shit, and I don't know what they mean, but Ronald will occasionally pretend like they matter.
I will say that they sit very high, and it has a lot of action on it.
Okay. And is it clacky or is it just loud?
Yeah, is it clacky or is it clicky?
It's not actually
the difference. Like, did you have to full press it, or do you have to like half press it? Or
no, you can half press and it enters. Like, it's not like super clacky.
Light up keyboards are just light up shoes for adults.
But anyway, I bring it up to get to my recommendations. So I've recently been playing Fallout 4. I'm a longtime Falloutsman. I played 1 and 2 back in the day and have kept up with the series since then, for better or worse. I ended up having a lot of fun with Fallout 4, and I played it a bunch, and I got a little more curious about some of the antecedents that went into the Fallout kind of aesthetic, because I found myself thinking about like how Fallout kind of shakes out along with Ren and Stimpy as part of that kind of 90s skewering of post-war America that happened. And I thought that was a very interesting cultural connection.
Pedophile.
I would like to say I don't think Fallout was made by a pedophile, as far as I know.
Yeah, just Ren and Stimpy.
Well, the Fallout anyway, 3.
Yeah. But it got me curious about some of the antecedents. I guess there is the faction Children of Atom. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, Fallout Tactics.
Yeah.
All that.
But that put me on the trail to, I've been meaning to watch the movie A Boy and His Dog for a very long time. It's a 1974 post-nuclear apocalypse film based on a novella by Harlan Ellison. And I watched it on Plex, I believe. I finally got Plex loaded on my Roku and found it on there. And I was really taken with it. It's not an easy watch. There's a lot of material that is pretty rough to sit through. It's very misogynist, and a lot of sexual violence is both threatened and portrayed. I think that is in keeping with the idea of the savagery of the setting. I think it is it's legitimate artistic purpose behind it. But just to caution anybody out there, it's kind of rough viewing a lot of the time. But it was very, very compelling. And I thought very interesting in the tax that it takes. And how it influenced the Fallout series of video games, like a lot of the kind of design elements, I was very like, oh yeah, there that is, and there that is. But more importantly, it put me on the trail of reading more Harlan Ellison. I'd only ever read a handful of his stories before, and I knew he was kind of an enfant terrible of the science fiction scene back in the kind of the 60s, 70s heyday of the new wave. So I decided to read some more of his work, and I gotta tell you something, folks, he's a real... He's a real corker of a writer. That guy has some verve. Lawrence is in the chat saying "Whimper of Whipped Dogs." I need to read that. I will read that as well.
Sorry to interrupt. But what is corker of a? He's like good.
That's good. Yeah, yeah. That means not good, know this weird British slang from the 1960s, Rahul. I'm so fucking disappointed in you.
it's my way of saying he's a real.
Watch Austin Powers. You should know this.
If they did say that in Austin Powers, I'd probably have been like, what is he saying?
It's my way of saying it's good writing, and he's a bit of a pistol. I guess to put it lightly. So I would recommend the works of science fiction writer Harlan Ellison.
Give us a couple. I've read I Have No Mouth, But I Must Scream.
Yeah, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream is awesome. A Boy and His Dog, the novella, I ended up reading that. That's very good. Again, very grim.
Yeah.
But right now I'm working through this really cool anthology that he wrote called Partners in Wonder. And I say he wrote, it's actually a collection of stories he wrote in collaboration with this murderer's row of big name science fiction authors. It was originally published in 1971. So this is like kind of guys from the 50s and 60s writing in collaboration with Harlan Ellison. And he introduces each story with a like multi-page introduction talking about like his friendship with this person or his interaction. And so you get these neat stories and also a ton of stories about like what it was like going to the science fiction conventions when you were 18 years old in 1955 and whatever. So it was just, I don't know. It's kind of, it's an interesting collection of stories just for the sake of the stories. And also it gets you a lot of genre history while you're there. So Partners in Wonder by Harlan Ellison. Seek it out. There's a paperback edition from 1983 that I'm reading.
Sweet.
Yep. And do you have a caution?
My caution would be beware of friends who are so jealous of your new keyboard that they can't help but insult you about it.
I thought Daniel, you and I were going to share the caution known as Zack Snyder's new movie.
Yes, we can also do. I'll let you talk on it more, but I will definitely caution anyone against watching Zack Snyder's new movie, Rebel Moon. It is the it's like if someone gave a 10th grader $1 million to make a movie out of the doodles on the back of his notebook.
That sounds, I don't know why, but though. It just sounds so much more exciting when I know it sucks. Like, it's, I know it's gonna be, I think, so an
underrated
bad
aspect of the movie is how bad it looks. Like, it looks very cheap.
It does. It just, it does not.
Good,
yeah,
though. You know, which tells me, like,
you guys,
I
are
know
convinced. These fuckers try to pick the worst movie possible every time we do a movie. So you guys are only adding fuel to the fire here.
Well, no, we're not going to make watch it for the pod until the extended edition comes out.
Yeah, the Snyder.
Oh, yeah, the Snyder cut of a Snyder movie.
No, you're joking, but that's fucking happening. They're releasing an R-rated cut with an extra hour.
No, they're coming out with a DLC for the movie.
What? How?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
If there's going to be another edition with just more scenes in it, and it's not.
What happened was Netflix wanted like a more commercially minded version of the movie. So there's a like 2 hour, 15 minute PG-13 cut. And like at some point in the future, there's going to be like a 3 hour plus R rated cut of the movie, in addition to a part two of Rebel Moon.
And then
and presumably there's also going to be PG-13 R-rated versions of part two.
Yeah.
So Lawrence wasn't kidding when he said that there is a Snyder cut of a Snyder movie.
That's amazing.
Yes.
It's a direct, I mean, I get that it's a director's cut, but dear God.
The original movie is a director's cut because he cut the movie. Yeah. Like, what is he laboring under?
I can kind of understand the Justice League one. I mean, the movie was the Snyder cut was fucking terrible, but like, I can understand why you would make a cut because somebody else like made the final decisions. But like, yeah, he made this one. He did this one.
Now, Ronald,
why does anyone think that the other one's going to be better?
Man likes releasing Snyder cuts.
Now, Ronald, I put it to you. You're saying it was terrible now, but I can dig around in the Discord and find you praising that movie some when you watched it.
Oh, shit. Is what this movie? True?
Justice League.
Is there evidence saying Ronald?
Oh, I didn't watch. Yeah, I watched it. I didn't like it.
Oh, I think there's evidence. I think Lawrence is alluding to the fact that there is evidence of you saying that you liked the Justice League.
Okay.
And I may not be able to find it because Discord's
The evidence isn't real. He's not going to produce it. But
the shame alone.
He is saying that. No, I mean, like, whatever. The Justice League has its own weird cult following, which I find very funny. Like, if you ever talk shit about, for some reason, any of the Zack Snyder DC movies online, there's like a whole group of people who word search that and decide to flame you for it. Which
the most pissed off people have gotten about me. The most pissed off people have gotten to me on the internet after I like make memes is the people, the Snyder people, and fans of the Star Wars show Andor. Those people are vicious if you at all criticize their particular pieces of pop culture.
Well, Ronald, I have good news for you, which is I was scrolling up to try to find you praising Justice League, and instead I found that screen cap I posted of the Resident Evil porn parody. And now I'm too distracted to keep scrolling. So
it wouldn't have been in Discord, you fool.
You didn't need to tell us that you were distracted.
It would have been in Signal.
Well, so I definitely don't have that. You know how I go through phones. Oh, shit, I just got that one from that picture of Drew Barrymore, where that doppelganger movie where she's got an evil skeleton.
That movie fucking rules.
that was a very striking still. I don't know that I've seen it.
That's one of those movies where you put it on, there's no way you'll predict what happens by the end of it.
I mean, I did just spoil it, but yeah. Anyways, let's go to some, you know, other stuff. So I'm going to do a recommendation thing now. Okay, so I have two recommendations, no caution. But first I got to find where I wrote them down because my browser windows are crazy right now. Okay, here we go.
First off, I finally saw Daimajin, which is a Daiyai kaiju movie from like 1960s. The sort of twist with this one is that it, for like 90% of its runtime, is just a samurai melodrama with like light supernatural elements. And then in the last 10 minutes, Daimajin, who's this enormous like statue, just comes to life and fucks shit up and like attacks his castle and stuff. And it's pretty fun seeing a kaiju rampaging around in like historical times. And I also found the samurai melodrama weirdly engaging. So, you know, check out Daimajin. And then I also finally saw Rikkyo, The Story of Rikki, which is this insanely violent kung fu flick about a guy who goes to a privatized prison. And for some reason, the prison runs on brutal kung fu. And there's literally a scene where he beats a guy up so bad that the guy commits harakiri by cutting his guts open. But then the guy who committed harakiri is like, man, I still would really like to kill Rikki. So he tries to strangle Rikki with his own intestines that are coming out of the cut he did from committing harakiri. So, you know what? Watch that movie. It's extremely violent in a very funny way, and I loved it. It's on the Criterion Channel right now, which is weird.
Nice.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah. Anyways, that's it for me. Daimajin and Rikkyo, The Story of Rikki. I don't know. Ronnie, why don't you tell us how bad Rebel Moon is?
Well, first, I want to recommend the film series I've been watching lately in my my 2024 resolution to become an unironic Republican. I've been watching the Tom Selleck cop series, Jesse Stone, where he is a drunk L.A. cop who moves to a small seaside Massachusetts town to become police chief because Saul Rubinek thinks he can control him. But in fact, he's actually a damn good cop. And
they're
just very pleasant to watch. Like, they're like, you know, like these little mysteries. There's nine of them. I've been watching them out of order, which is really funny because like one of them ends with like a supporting character in an irreversible coma, and then suddenly he's just up and walking around. like the early ones have Viola Davis in them before Viola Davis clearly became too big for the movie franchise. And you know, they're just fun, and I enjoy watching them, and that seeks into my caution, which is of course Rebel Moon Part One, A Child of Fire, which I watched with Daniel against both of our better judgments, I would argue.
Well, this is one of those ways that we egg each other on and are terrible enablers of one another.
Yeah.
Because as said before, we have a Star Wars podcast, and we, you know, in between seasons, aka books we read, we do sort of bonus material, and I guess no better bonus material than Zack Snyder's failed Star Wars pitch, Rebel Moon. Imagine a movie that's over 2 hours long, and 80% of it is gathering a team of characters that have no characterization whatsoever. And then the villain is kicked in the balls, brutal. falls off a platform, and then is immediately resurrected by the villain who what is his name? Balserius, whatever.
Balserius. Well, Yahoo, it's clearly serious? A take on the.
I don't know.
It's clearly a take on the Byzantine general Belisarius, but it's spelled differently.
I mean, real talk. It might also just be Belisarius Call from fucking Warhammer 40K.
Probably so.
But it's got like...
Who is named after Belisarius, so it's like a secondhand
right.
reference. It's got a lot of memorable scenes, like multiple characters almost being raped. A shirtless guy taming a bird creature. You know, the one from the third Harry Potter movie.
A hippogriff, yeah.
Yeah. Anthony Hopkins is a robot who kills a guy and then feels bad about it and then disappears from the rest of the movie.
Damn, has Anthony Hopkins?
His voice.
You know,
yeah, so. he voices the C-3PO who isn't C-3PO.
His name is Jimmy.
Is he also weirdly like coded as gay for no readily apparent reason?
His casing has a bunch of flowers on it.
He's wearing
awesome.
Antlers.
So whatever that means.
This is so weird because everything you guys say about these movies is a reason like why it's bad kind of makes me want to watch it more.
No, see, that's the thing. That's what it does to you. That's what it does to you. If someone said to me like, hey, would you like to watch some meatheads attempt at making Dune and Star Wars and Warhammer at the same time? I'd be like, of course, let me give you money to do that. What a privilege. And then when you're actually sitting at, you're so bored and just filled with hate. I was bored and filled with hate the entire runtime.
Hey, Daniel, remember
it
when...
sounds like what my reaction will be.
Remember when there was, for no apparent reason, like the Asian woman Blade Runner with lightsabers was fighting Jenna Malone as a spider woman who was kidnapping children?
Yes, a spider, is a spider woman?
A spider lady kidnapping children on the Blade Runner planet.
That's awesome.
No, it's not. I'm telling you.
Me in.
It's 134 minutes long. He's just little kids.
Look, this is the guys. I'm telling you, this is exactly what happened with Krull. Everything on the surface says I should love Krull, and I try to every time, and I just can't.
Yeah, Krull's really boring too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
also, Zack Snyder is so starved of imagination that like. He just dresses up the villains as Nazis. Like he saw Neil Patrick Harris in Starship Troopers and said, "No, this is too subtle."
I might watch this movie.
I don't think that you've done a very good job documenting Rahul and Lawrence.
Hey, keep your own counsel, everybody.
I'm gonna wait until the R-rated cut comes out, though.
I think we all know it's gonna be terrible, but they're gonna make me watch it anyway.
It has a gravity, you know. I can't explain it.
We're not making you watch that one for a while. We've got the Christian Saw for you to watch, Ronald.
You know, I wonder. You know, it's so funny. Like the streaming business models. Like it doesn't matter if it's good as long as it draws people.
I mean,
to the platform.
It's really weird though because I mean. Real talk, Rebel Moon cost like what $100 million, right?
Did it really? Oh,
something like that.
160.
Yeah, well, it was like 160. Yeah, it's 80 million for each part.
Which I mean, pretty low for that kind of movie, but an enormous amount of money for Netflix. And there's no realistically, I don't think that there's any chance of that movie actually attracting enough subscribers or causing enough subscribers to be retained to make that.
Oh, also, I forgot. It's a secret. Like. Movie about how the Romanov should have never been murdered.
Huh.
And Anastasia can bring birds back to life.
That's right. I forgot. That's right. It's also white Russian propaganda. I forgot about that part.
Oh, God.
Man, just more and more fascinating.
No, the weird thing about this movie, though, is that, like you guys said, it's so expensive and it's meant to draw people in. I don't think I know anyone who's I feel like it's aimed at our demographic. I don't feel like I know anyone who's actually watched the movie outside of you guys who watched it to make fun of it on a podcast.
it's absolutely one of those movies that's a lot more fun to talk about than actually watch.
Definitely, definitely.
I mean, that's
because,
most Netflix
because
movies.
Daniel and like, I were on the phone when we watched it together, and most of our remarks are just like, this is fucking tedious, and I hate this, and I hate you for watching this with me.
Wait, you guys were also on the phone when you watched Blackmail. I guess you guys just regularly like call each other up like besties and watch movies together.
Yeah, what's it like to have friends? What is that?
Yeah,
it's a lot like having a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody listens to this shit. You know that, right? We're essentially doing the same thing.
I mean, I routinely call Daniel while he's on his weekly trip to the dump, so... Yeah,
it's not the dump. It's I live in unincorporated county land, and we don't have recycling pickup. So I save all my recyclables and I take them to the drop off bins once a week. Thank you.
And then Ronnie likes to
make fun of me for having a garbage car.
Have you ever considered recycling by just burning it and turning it into dust?
Yeah,
into carbon. Not really, no, but I do for all of like my vegetables that I didn't use in time. I have a very convenient escarpment outside the back door of my house, so I huck them down there for the bunnies.
Anyways, fuck it. Come on, guys, let's bring this one home. We somehow, okay, Ronald.
Well, how? We still have 2 hours. We gotta watch this movie, dude.
Yeah, we gotta watch the entire movie and comment on it.
I legitimately have an infant and stuff. Ronald,
yes,
come on.
That hasn't been proven to me.
Because you fucking fled the state. It's my take on what happened. You feared
here's
my
the thing
powers.
About infants. You can always ignore them.
Ronnie, that hurt my heart a little.
All right. I'll go fast. Okay. So I have two this week. First off, I'll do my caution, which is kind of a recommendation, but it's a book called The Will of the Many by James Islington. This book just came out last year, 2023. I really liked the book, but it's a book in a series, probably, I don't know how long, at least a trilogy. And the first one like just came out a few months ago. So don't read this yet. Like it's quite good, but maybe you're cool with that, but I have a hard time waiting for stuff. So it's like you pick it up and then you just have to wait around for like 5 years. I have been hurt in the past. I read the first Song of Ice and Fire book in like 2001.
Oh, so, God, yeah.
You know, it's 23 years and counting for me. And I'm not even, you know, didn't even read it when it first came out. I can't even imagine for some people. But so I don't know, you know, it's tough. But this guy seems pretty proficient or prolific. So I think he'll come out with all the books, but it'll be like 4 or 5 years before they do. So maybe just wait on that one. The recommendation I have is Poor Things, a 2023 film by Yorgos Lanthimos. I just saw this movie last week. It was quite good. It's a bit too long. There's a lot of really good physical acting by Emma Stone. Basically, the premise of this movie is Frankenstein discovering feminism.
All right.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange movie, and it's like 2.5 hours long, and they probably could have cut like around 30 minutes out of it. But yeah, it was really good. It was really well directed.
I saw it too. It was really good. I thought so.
Yeah, so definitely a great movie. That's
Mark Ruffalo is hilarious in it.
Yeah, he's really funny. Everyone's really good. I quite liked Willem Dafoe too. He's really weird.
Willem Dafoe keeps winning.
Yeah.
All right, and finally Rahul.
Okay, I'd like to caution against the Hulu show Limitless. Have you heard of this? It has Chris Hemsworth doing like these challenges that are loosely tied to living longer.
Oh, but I thought it was the Limitless show based on the movie.
I mean, it kind of is somehow. Like it's kind of like loosely tied in with that, but also with Chris Hemsworth just being like, it'd be cool to be immortal.
It's a reality show though?
It's like a documentary kind
of. Yeah, it's more like a documentary. It's like, you know, it's like one of them's like cold exposure, so he has to swim in really cold water. And they're all really hard challenges, but none of the episodes address, first of all, it feels a little hollow to me because it's like, oh, now Chris is going to do this, you know, 5 days a week and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It just feels like these are things that you take years to do, not just 4 days. But anyway, besides all that, they don't talk about diet at all. And I'm like, this whole show is about living longer. So, you know, but whatever.
The only way to live longer is to take cold baths or whatever.
Now, the only way to live longer is to embrace the love and understanding of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and win eternal life. That's it.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
He'll make you immortal or something.
I didn't talk about that at all.
I didn't finish the book yet, but I think there's a way.
I think the Limitless movie is a better recommendation for how to go through life was to just get really high on drugs all the time.
Yeah.
And then whenever someone thinks, hey, here's going to be a consequence for you, you're like, psych, I invented a new drug.
Yeah. Psych, I don't have any development because I just figured out how to fucking destroy this drug or whatever.
Yeah, I'm so smart that that thing you said was going to happen, I just figured out a way it wouldn't happen. So it's fine. That's literally the climax of the film Limitless. You think he's going to like have a problem because he can't get the drug anymore. He's just like, nah, I made more. It's
he's
fine.
Like, nah, I don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
And also, I'm still that smart.
What?
There is a part where he bangs the hot landlord, though.
Well, yeah, he's got no limits. Not even
Man, limitless is like the equivalent of like when you summon a genie and your first wish is to wish for more wishes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or when you summon a genie and say, I the only way you're getting it here is through me, and I'd love to see that. And then he spikes the camera and turns you into a glass window and walks through you. That's what limitless is like.
Yeah.
Ronnie, yeah. That was a Wishmaster reference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Jim Trapman.
You should watch Wishmaster, Ronnie. It's good.
I've watched Wishmaster. I've watched all of the Wishmasters, even the ones where the Wishmaster gets replaced by a worse actor.
Yeah, where the first one where he gets replaced by Sean Connery's son, and the second one where he gets replaced by a guy from Battlestar Galactica. It's not as good.
And not Edward James.
Nope. Now that one actually would be pretty interesting. Just a surly Jin who wishes you'd leave him alone. And always seems kind of drunk. Anyways, okay.
Anyway.
Recommendation?
I'd like also to recommend a series I've been reading, Dungeon Crawler Carl. It's a lit RPG / progression fantasy.
Why did you say Dungeon Crawler Carl like that?
Like what? He said it normally.
Yeah, that's how you.
You
say
were like,
it.
"I'd like to recommend this series, Dungeon Crawler Carl."
Dungeon Crawler Carl. You slipped
into New Zealand for a second there.
I'd like to recommend.
That's how you say
Carl. Dungeon Crawler Carl.
You Reese Darby'd for a second. That's all I'm saying.
I'd like to recommend.
Yeah, I'd recommend.
Fucking France.
All right, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, it's just super fun. It's a great sci-fi concept, and it weaves together fantasy and sci-fi in a really interesting combination, I think. It's not finished. There are only 6 books, but that's enough to get started, and the guy seems prolific.
That's a lot of books.
It's a good number of books, and they're all long, and I always wonder how these guys write these books so fast. It's crazy.
They don't edit them.
Yeah.
Even
and also, the books are highly
it's that one.
Actual ghostwriters.
And also, the books are highly formulaic and pretty easy to like churn out. Is
but
another kind
of like 750 pages for the 6th. Like, that's a long book.
That's less. That's the entire series is less than the Terror. It's less than half the Terror. That's not long.
What?
The entire series? All right,
yeah, the Terrors are really
long. The Terror's not that long.
Yeah, it is.
How many pages of the Terror?
The Terror, well, I know it takes 32 hours to read it aloud.
That's not that long.
Yes, it is.
Dude,
the Terror is
700.
The Terror is 784.
Right. Pages. This is just one of 6 books.
Oh, wait, you're saying, I thought you said the whole series was 700.
No. Just one book was 750 pages.
Dude, I listened to a fantasy book that was like 60 hours long on Audible.
What the fuck?
Jesus.
I don't remember. I'll look.
It
really made an impression.
No, I can't remember which. I can't remember which one it was. To be honest,
I listened to a 60-hour book once. Wasn't very good, honestly. Anyways, I have a plug. Whatever, you go look up your book first. But I have a plug that I'm.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so my plug is just this bit from Abby Cornish's Wikipedia or IMDb page. Abby Cornish, also known by her rap name Dusk. That's it.
Dusk.
Okay.
Yep. Her rap name is Dusk.
The book was Rhythm of War by Brandon Sanderson, and it's 57 hours long.
Jesus.
Really? I should have guessed Sanderson.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know, yeah, right? Ronald, I know this is. I'm sorry,
I didn't actually listen to the whole thing. I listened to a little bit of it, and I read
the rest.
Yeah, because I whisper synced it or whatever. Also, it's not that great of a book. Don't fucking read it.
Why did you do
so much?
Oh wait,
it's the Brandon Sanderson promise.
Yeah,
it's not that great of a book. It happens at great length.
At the time, I was moving, and I was on the road for like 28 hours, and so I listened to like 20 hours of it on the road, and then by that time, I had already bought in. So.
Hey, yeah. Man, I got no room to talk. I listened to the Mistborn series working through it as I shelved books in the library.
Same thing. And it's like, those are so long, too, and like not worth the...
Wait, is that that lame Mormon guy?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
He finished off Wheel of Time and did Mistborn and way, Path of Kings or whatever, and this one Ronald's talking about.
Oh, right. I remember Ronald was trying to make me listen to him, and I said no.
I was not.
Yeah, you were. You said I would like the Stormlight archive because one of the characters was an alcoholic fucker.
Oh, yeah. No, okay. So you were asking about Brandon Sanderson, like, which book you should read, and I was like, I think you'd like the Stormlight archive because there is a guy who is... Yeah, a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah, a recovering alcoholic fuck up, and, you know.
The first couple of books of that series is pretty good, but it's very lost its way.
Yeah,
my opinion. Some people really love that.
Until I've read literally every single Robert R. McCammon and Warhammer 40K book, I just don't think I have much more space on my dance card.
Yeah. Anyways. Stick to one author. That's really the way to read.
This is kind of unrelated, but I'm reading Adolf Hitler's IMDb page right now, and I have to share what's listed under trademarks for Adolf Hitler. Okay, his frequently parodied toothbrush mustache, his fierce, loud, energetic speeches, his party salute with extended arm, his dramatic hand gestures while addressing crowds, and his diatribes against Jews and Bolshevism.
Those are his trademarks.
And his nicknames include Der Führer, Mein Führer, and Wolf.
No,
Wolf. Is it one of his nicknames?
Wolf.
Where?
No, he tried to get that to. No one picked up on it. Okay. No, he was trying to make.
You know, I'm trying to make Wolf happen.
It's never happening at all.
You know what? As long as we're doing it, here's Adolf Hitler's entry for the villains wiki. His powers.
What are we
doing
here, boys?
Powers and skills. Employing military strategies. Command over the German military. Master oration. Hobby. Ranting about his failed plans and the incoming German defeat of World War II. Goals. Turn the tide of World War II. Rebuild Berlin as Germania. Both failed. Find Fagelin. Kill himself and his mistress and prevent their corpses from being exposed by the Russians before they take over. Both succeeded.
What? That's one of his goals.
It's on IMDb. It says under other works, it says music video featured archive footage in Incubus Video Megalomaniac. I really like the idea of, like, yeah, you know, that guy Hitler, he was in the Incubus video.
And he was sponsored by Wolf Cola.
You know, Wolf. You know that guy, Wolf Hitler.
and that's the episode title.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Anyways,
we can pack it in.
Guess what type of villain Adolf Hitler is?
What are the types? What's an example of a type?
I don't fucking know, but his type is genocidal tyrant, which, yeah, okay, hard to argue.
Okay, yeah.
Not accurate, wrong, yeah.
Very accurate.
Oh, there's also an Adolf Hitler entry for Adolf Hitler Disney, which appears to be entirely about Der Führer's face.
Yeah, that Donald Duck cartoon, right?
Yeah.
You know that Disney put out that little short about celebrating 100 years of Disney? I didn't see Hitler in that.
Yeah,
they went so far as to bring back the genie and use old Robin Williams clips, so they didn't bring in Hitler. What the hell?
Yeah,
I can't believe they're making Hitler hang out with Uncle Remus out around back while they're shooting this.
Or those birds that teach you about menstruation and contraception for those shorts they released in Mexico in the 50s.
Oh yeah.
I'd love to see a Disney short of just all of the Disney characters that are on the outs, like the racist crows from Dumbo and Hitler.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, I guess for all of us at Bad Time Radio, Hitler is very bad, guys. I know we joked about it, but he is legitimately a bad person. And
that's a very hot take.
Yeah, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna gather